Welcome to Iconic, where we talk about all things 13th age. I'm your host, JM, and with me as always are Nick, Becca, and Mark.
Hey.
Hello.
Yo.
Welcome to episode 2 of season 3. It's still hard to believe that we are, we'll break 100 episodes this season, which is kind of insane to me.
What?
Yeah. Like, there's a lot of Iconic out there. Huh. We have a great show for you this week. Today, we're talking about 13th age, which may come as a surprise to some of you, but the reason we're doing this is...
We forgot in season one.
My best friend is starting to run his very first game ever, and he is running 13th Age, and he has started listening to Iconic, and he was like, hey, where's like the introduction to 13th Age episode? And I'm like, what are you talking about? He's like, well, you're talking to me like I already know a bunch about 13th Age. What about the introduction to 13th Age episode? And I was like, we have to have done that. So I went to Nick and Nick was like, we have to have done that. And when we presented it to the group, Mark was like, we have to have done that in season one. Turns out we didn't. So this is going to be the episode that we're going to put together. So if you are a new GM or pitching this game to your players, we want this episode to be a short, hey, here's why 13th Age is awesome. Here's what we love about it. Go out there and play it. So, and again, honestly, we really should have done this in season one.
But I will say at third season now, we were much more experienced and give you some much better reasons.
Yes.
Because when we first started, it was all new to us too.
Yeah. The innocent days of season one. All right. So let's talk about why play 13th Age. And for me, kind of one of the starting points is if you have played or seen or watched or heard about this game, Dungeons & Dragons, or about the role-playing experience, you understand the basics of 13th Age. Mechanically, it is built on the bones of Dungeons & Dragons. So if you've watched Critical Role or The Chain or any of the actual play shows that have become very popular, you are familiar with 13th Age mechanically. It is Fantasy 20, it is D20 roots. Mechanically, it's foundationally still D&D. It's a D20 versus a target number. Now let's talk about what makes it even more interesting.
One of the things that, especially for players that are creating a character, they all have a one unique thing. And that's something that sets their character apart from every other PC, NPC out there in the world. And right away, even in that very first session zero, creating a character, it's putting their idea into a spotlight, giving them a hook and saying, I am unique and I'm going to play this character, you know, and a way of not only making a statement about their character, but kind of sometimes projecting to the GM a really great big hook to grab onto that they know that at least this player is going to have buy-in to.
Yeah. It doesn't require your player to have a fully fleshed backstory. It's a simple idea that then becomes the story and becomes your character.
Yep. It helps by stating their one unique thing. It kind of sets some canon for your world. Because each 13th Age game you run will be different. Every game you run in Eberron, it's Eberron. You'll have a different character, but it's Eberron. There's still kings and queens and high mages are going to be the same. Not here. Just started a 13th Age game. My cleric, his one unique thing, he's a reincarnated icon. We don't know which one yet. So he's an icon from the past that's been reincarnated, and he's made it be known off the table. At the end of this, I would like to become an icon. That's his kind of, he'd like to see his story arc of that. So that will play in.
Yeah. It's the narrative hook that as the player, you don't need to know much about the game, but you get to go, if you're a storyteller, if you like the narrative aspect of role-playing, here's your opportunity to kind of forge a hook and say, GM, I want you to hang part of the campaign off of this for me. Mm-hmm. It ties in with backgrounds, as Mark said. Now, one of the most interesting parts of role-playing for me is your character knows more than you do about the world. So if you're new to gaming, if you're new to 13th Age, always be asking your GM, well, what does my character know about this? And what's interesting, instead of a list of skills like you might have seen in other games or that you might be familiar with from other games, 13th Age breaks these down into what they call backgrounds. Becca, do you want to cover backgrounds for us?
Sure. So your background is what your character was doing before they started out on this adventure, and it gives you a reason as to why they may know different things. Instead of having a list of skills such as lockpicking, survival, animal handling, that type of thing, this lets you go, well, at one point I was the royal zookeeper of the owl bears. That automatically then lets you know, I probably can do animal handling. I probably can do something like this. And you don't have to try to figure out what on your list you're able to do. You look at your background and go, I probably can because this is my background.
Right. But it also establishes narrative canon because now there's a royal court for the owlbears. And who knew that owlbears had nobility, let alone a court?
Yep.
I didn't as I made it up.
Yep. And there's great examples in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how one of my new players, you know, trying to get the concept across, he's a paladin, and he took Hellhole Commando. By taking that, we've set in the storyline that there is a unit called the Hellhole Commandos. And he's used it to do certain things skill check wise, you know, climbing in the rubble into the underworld and had to climb down. You're like, yeah, I can climb. I'm a Hellhole Commando. Okay, great. Roll that.
Yeah. So then as a GM, instead of going, well, you have to know this, it's all right, roll your D20 and explain to me how in the world your character should be able to do this. Because yep. As of right now, you are a cleric.
Yep.
So how but do it, they know that?
It's another part of this game that I love is this failing forward. We want you to succeed. And it's not a hard, you know, no, I want to say no. It's, I want to say yes. Tell me how, develop the story so you can bring up, well, you know, 10 years ago during this campaign, I had to do this as a Hellhole Commando.
And you boom, never know when one, or when one of those things will become foundational to the rest of the campaign.
Well, and one of the things that we haven't really mentioned explicitly yet is that a huge pillar for 13th Age is it's a very narrative focused game.
Mm-hmm.
And so things like One Unique Things and things like backgrounds is a way to, instead of the GM always having to figure out how am I going to get creative? What am I going to use in this campaign? How am I going to narrate this? It's okay, we're going to do this together. It's your turn, player.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. You want to go jump over this river? All right. Well, tell me how you should be able to get this bonus.
Yeah.
It's also a great way to, as a player, you're always going to get a bonus. As long as you can get use your imagination and get creative with how you're going to use this, you're always going to get a bonus to your skill checks.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I think in all of the games that I've played, I can only remember not getting a bonus once or twice. And it was just because it was way off the beaten path idea. And there was no creative way for me to mm-hmm. BS my way through this particular background.
Right.
But even then, I still can make the attempt.
Right.
Yes.
Well, yep. And something that Mark pointed out, there's also this idea of failing forward with background checks. So instead of the GM being encouraged to say, well, if they fail this lock picking roll, they don't pick the lock. They are encouraged to say, well, you pick the lock, but not quick enough that the guards don't notice you. Or you pick the lock, but it's not the room you thought it was, and there's a dragon on the other side. The idea is if you make your roll, you get your stated goal with no complications. If you fail your roll, you may still get your stated goal, but with complications. And that ties into another thing that we love about 13th Age. This is not a zero to hero game. You are not going to slog through low levels and then get cool.
Hmm.
13th Age characters feel heroic from session one.
Yes. Mm-hmm. One of my yes. players that's playing the paladin, I've played now since like 1987. He rolled up his paladin and I was like, okay, here's how many hit points you have. 30. He was like, that is so cool. Hmm. He's used to first edition where he might have 8.
If
he's heroic,
really
he's already hooked.
Well.
He's already hooked.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But that flavors everything about the game. But
yes.
The fact that failing forward because you're heroes. The icon relationships, which we'll get into next, because you're heroes. When we talk about tactical combat here in a bit, the idea of mooks. Why? Because you are heroes. So mm-hmm. as a GM, you should always be thinking of, when they ask you for a skill check or a background check, think of what's the most creative thing that could happen because they are heroes. Players, if you're used to other games, just realize hero with a capital H is where you start in 13th Age.
Yes. Right now, I'm not restarting, but I'm starting a D&D game, and it's been fascinating to be back at level one and just feel limited in comparison to the 13th age level one. I definitely felt heroic as a first level monk in 13th age.
And yes. So the difference would be in 13th age, the story of the campaign is about your heroes. And in many ways, that is the only story in town. It's like looking at fiction and realizing when I read The Wheel of Time, I'm reading about the protagonists. I'm not reading about the other guys who have little side stories that are going on. In 13th age, you are the protagonists in a big way from right off the bat.
Yes.
So I mentioned icons. That's a unique thing about 13th age. Mark, you want to give us an overview?
Icons are so great. No, they are. It's just, yes. they're not the gods. They're just the important players in the world. And you can take the Dragon Empire and have the Archmage, the Emperor, the Lich King, or you can make your own, but they're the movers and shakers of the world. They're your patrons or your sponsors or your antagonists. It could be they're working against you, and you'll have a relationship, which I will mention on the first night. Three players, I got five icon relationship roles. I said, don't expect that every time, guys.
Yeah.
And they spent them all. I said, these go away. We'll roll them again, start of next turn. And they were spending them, mm-hmm. Which is good. That's what you should do. And I think they had a lot of fun with it. And because of who they picked, those are the movers and shakers in our campaign right now.
You basically get to pick, if you are the protagonist, you get to pick those major NPCs that are involved in your story, for better or worse, positive or negative, and you get to cash in on them. And they're not combat. Like, this is another thing, like Nick was talking about, this is a highly narrative focused thing. You want to explain the icon relationship benefits?
It kind of goes back to what we were talking about, backgrounds and coming up with a creative way and saying, okay, I was a zookeeper and that's somehow applicable in this other scenario. When you roll a 6 on your icon relationship die at the beginning of the session, you get some sort of boon or favor from that particular icon. And if there's something that you want to do, or there's some scenario where you need help, or no one's making their success to get past the skill check, you can cash in as the player. You have the prerogative to cash in that token or that icon relationship and say, well, coming around the corner, there's this agent of the three. And we know each other because we each are wearing the same insignia on our jackets. And he comes over and he hands me this key, and it just happens to be the one that unlocks the gate for us to get in. You know, the GM obviously has to kind of take it and run with it, but it's a way for a player to say, look, we're in a bind. We need a way out. And we just make it happen.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you roll a 5, you still get that benefit. And there's going to be some sort of complication to that. So if that agent were to come up and hand you the key, it may come along with a scroll that says, by taking this key, you are now indebted to me and you need to go return this particular thing, or mm-hmm. some sort of hook for the GM to kind of put it back on the players and like, all right, you get in. And something else is going to happen mm-hmm. because right. of this.
And so when Nick says when you roll a 5, basically you have 3 icon relationships with your character. And at the start of every session, you roll a D6 for each point, each of those 3 points. And if any of them come up 5 or 6s, you get to cash in a relationship at some point in that session. But the other thing is for the GMs, if you're stuck and you're like, I don't, you know, they did something I didn't expect. What do I do? Have a player roll icon relationships and see what comes up. And maybe it's the, oh, well, he got something with the Archmage. Okay, well, that at least gives me a framework for what this next scene, who is affected this next scene. Mm-hmm.
Or even as a GM, when you're kind of casting the idea for the campaign out, there's published ways of how to run a limited icon campaign. So where if you don't want to have certain aspects or certain elements in your game, you just maybe eliminate those icons, and all of a sudden, you know, like if you take out the Diabolist, you probably won't have very many demon-elemented things in your game, because mm-hmm. the Diabolist, who is all demon-aspected, isn't going to be a part of that initial campaign when you're building yeah. it.
So another narrative, this will be the last kind of narratively unique thing to 13th Age, is the montage. Now, the montage can be used for a variety of things in your game, whether it's to narrate travel, whether it's to narrate meeting a new NPC, whether it's to do a flashback. But basically, instead of getting the ruler out and figuring out how many days it's going to take to get from one side of the continent to the other, you instead push it to the players and say, all right, So as you travel from point A to point B, Nick, what's an interesting thing that happened along the way? And so the first player comes up with something interesting that happened on the way and then hands the baton of the montage off to another player who says, well, here's how my character was super awesome and shined at doing that. But then... And then they come up with something unique and it goes to the next person and they solve it and come up with something unique.
I have definitely pulled this into games that I run in order to make it more player focused. I have found that a lot of times if I have my players walking across a great distance in order to get from point A to point B and I'm sitting there going, okay, make your survival rolls, make your observation checks. Oh, you guys missed something. Well, now you're stuck in the middle of nowhere in this giant battle that you may or may not survive from. With a montage, my players get to decide what they run into and how they are able to solve it without really stopping a lot of the action of the story.
Prime example from our Patreon game with Ulf. They ran into the giant and he sings and makes it cry. That was moving. Huh. That was really cool aspect of that montage. That was really cool. I liked it a lot. But it also set up that the dwarves have this song. So it came into the story of what was going on and all that. So that was really cool.
Well, the last thing that I think we all love about 13th Age is you have all of these very narrative, story-focused components. And then when combat breaks out, it has some of the most fun tactical combat. Again, it abstracts a lot of the things that might take some fun away from the game side of things. So you're not counting hexes. You're not counting movement spaces. You are the hero. So movement is it nearby? Is it far away? Am I engaged or not? Every class has powers, which are, how would you guys describe powers for classes?
You don't just swing a sword and do a D8 damage. There are powers, depending on who you are, that either do more damage or there's just more flavor to it. And
they have extra effects.
Extra effects. It's a lot more than just roll D20 plus 5, I hit, I do a D8 damage.
Right.
It can be at certain points.
That actually brings up another point. It sort of solves the fighter issue, which if you're familiar with the larger D20 movement, the linear fighter quadratic wizard has been a problem for a long time. But, and I don't really see it as a problem. It is a problem that people have commented on. But all characters are heroic in this game. In the fact that if you're a fourth level paladin, you're rolling your weapon die, a D10, times your level. So you're rolling 4d10 at level 4, whereas the wizard's casting 4d10 level, spells.
Yep. Yep.
You are rolling a ton of damage by the time you get to the end of this. One of the
things really does, in since I played for a while and played with a lot of the same players, there's, well, I want to do this. Well, you can't. Why? You don't get that in this game. I want to run over here, smack the goblin, and heal Nick's character. Okay. And because I got this power, I don't get you. You won't get the, well, why can't I do that? Mm-hmm. Well, because he's 9 squares away and you can only move 6. Right. He's nearby and your power says, now you might run out of certain powers, but at the beginning of the battle, you have all this potential to do things. It's just a lot. It's a lot of fun.
Yes. And for GMs, it's a running monsters is both very simple. Like building battles is very simple. Running monsters is very simple. But all of the monsters are fun to run. Rob and Jonathan, the designers, they've built into every die roll that you throw for a monster thematic powers that trigger when you roll a certain number, when you roll a certain number or higher, when you roll an even, when you miss on an odd. They take what in some games could be a page worth of information of, well, these are all of the things that this thing can do, and boil it down to, here is the essence of this monster. It still feels like a D20 monster. It still feels like what you are expecting to fight if you have played in these games before. But it's a lot less overhead for the GM to manage.
Yep. Mm-hmm. A couple quick little lines of flavor. This is what it can do. Your defensive stats, its attack stats, nastier specials if you want. It's really quick, and it's in all the products. You don't have to have, it's good to have the other one to make your own, but if you buy an adventure, all the monster stats are right there.
So kind of going back to your question about the powers that the different classes have, another kind of pillar that's 13th Age really leans into is this idea of we all have this understanding of fantasy tropes and stereotypes, and we are going to lean really heavily into that. Mm-hmm. So if you're a fighter, you are going to have lots of different ways to swing your sword. And even if you miss, something could still happen. You know, if it were a particular even or an odd roll. I mean, this kind of goes back to, Jane, what you were saying about there everyone being heroes. Like, even if you miss, most of the time you're still going to be dealing damage. Because
it's not a lot, but yeah.
But it still thematically adds to that.
Oh, yeah.
But like a rogue, stereotype, sneaky, sneaky, stabby, stabby, they have the ability to kind of sneak into the shadows and then on the next turn pop out and deal extra damage. And things like that where they're really leaning into the tropes of the different classes, and each class's power list is unique to that class. And, you know, I could make 15, 20 different rangers, and they're all going to be very, very different based on the choices there. The other thing that I want to mention about combat is the escalation die, because that's another really kind of unique thing about 13th Age. And it's this idea that the longer the heroes are in combat, the more the combat's going to swing in their favor. And after each round, the biggest D6 that you can find gets ratcheted up a number, and that is an additional bonus to all of the characters' attack rolls. So that if it drags on and on and on, and you're all the way into, you know, round five, you're going to be getting a +4 to all of your attack rolls. And I was thinking, even yesterday, I kind of sat back and was just amazed that, you know, we were a fourth level cleric, but between all my level bonuses and my magic item bonuses and the escalation, I was adding a +17 to my roll. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, whoa, this is incredible. And it really made me feel like a hero.
Yeah. So kind of final thoughts on 13th Age and why we love it. One of the things that I think is great about it is that if you buy the core rule book, it is everything you need to play. Mm-hmm. It is classes, it is rules, it is magic items, it is monsters, and it's an adventure in one book. Mm-hmm. And if you are interested at all in 13th Age, check out the Archmage engine. It's their SRD. A lot of it's stripped out about the Dragon Empire and the icons, but it's enough that if the GM has the book, the players can use the SRD for a couple of weeks until they're ready to get their own book. Yeah. And it's still only a one book investment.
Yes.
Yes. But if you do get others, and that's one of my comments on why we really like it, is the support from Pelgring Press is fantastic. Mm-hmm. They have a lot of products. They're well put together. Nothing takes me off worse to get something and then it kind of just dries up and you're like, so I have to create it all on my own. They said, if you buy the core book and then just go and get some of the adventures, everything's in the adventure you'll need with your core book. Mm-hmm. You don't need to have the bestiary. Mm-hmm. The support's great, because if I have to create everything, I might try to find a different product that has more support. You know, right. We all have limited time. They've got all these great products, you know, just there's a lot of stuff out there for it.
Yeah.
I think probably the biggest reason that I love 13th Age is that it really unlocks the imagination for both players and for GMs. It's get creative. Think about something that's a little bit maybe off cuff, you know, a little bit outside of the box, so to speak, and run with it. And nine times out of 10, it's going to run and 13th Age is going to handle it. Yeah. I like how empowered it makes me feel as a player. And as a GM, I like how easy it is and how it makes me feel empowered as a GM to really lean into my creativity and not get so bogged down by the nuances of counting squares and wondering, okay, well, I'm one square too far away for you to actually hit me, so you're going to have to wait until next round.
Becca.
Any time that I can convince people to sit down at a table and play a role-playing game, it is often because they want to be the heroes that they see in the stories and the movies that they watch. And 13th Age gives them that heroism right off the bat, and it gives them a way for them to tell their own story with very little extra work on my part. And I really like that. And I think a lot of the people who play at my table really like that idea too, that it is their story that they can invest in. And it is the heroic one that they want to tell.
Yeah. Well, that's why we, as Iconic, love 13th Age. If you're a new player and you're listening to this, go check out in season 2 our How to Be a Better Player, because we have a lot of 13th Age stuff in there. But also feel free to check out any of the Class Acts episodes, where we delve deeply into one of the core classes of 13th Age or 13th Age Glorantha. Those are a good place to start if you're looking and wondering, well, maybe this class looks cool. What do I need to know about it? If you're a GM, the rest of the show is for you. Between our random encounters where you can listen and come away with an actual idea for a fully fleshed out idea for an adventure. We look at iconic campaigns where we focus on one icon. We've done monster discussions, how to build battles. There's a lot of information here that we just put out for you guys to use. So if you're listening to this episode and you're getting into 13th Age, drop us a line. Let us know how it's going. And if you end up listening to the show and enjoying it, check out our Patreon. We support the show through Patreon, through Amazon referrals. If you want to, feel free to join. If not, just continue to listen and know that we will be putting these out every other week.
Thanks for listening.
And if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by becoming a patron at patreon.com/iconicpodcast or by using our Amazon referral link, which you can find in our show notes or on our website to do your online shopping.
Well, you've been listening to the Iconic Podcast.
If you have any questions, comments, or feedback, you can contact us at iconicpodcast@gmail.com or call and leave a voicemail at 720-924-1706.
And be sure to check out iconicpodcast.com for news, updates, and new episodes.
Thanks for listening.